This is the Rich Eisen Show.
How you doing?
Good, Dan. How about you?
No complaints. No complaints.
That's good. We don't want to hear him anyway, so.
That'll wrap it up for this show.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
That's a fact.
We don't want to hear the complaints.
We don't want to hear.
Absolutely don't want to hear complaints.
Absolutely not.
The Rich Eisen Show with guest host Dan Schwartzman. And now, sitting in for Rich.
Hit the drop.
It's Dan Schwartzman.
Hour number three, Dan Schwartzman in for Rich Eisen, Rich Eisen Show. To give you the quick count, Art Martinez on the other side of the glass. I am halfway through my corn muffin, halfway through the cookie, finished the coffee, am wired already.
Excellent.
And no comments from the wife because she's not here to tell me I've eaten like an absolute pig. Love it, though. But I think I've lost my touch a little. How do I leave half a muffin and half a cookie? This is unacceptable. I do have another hour, though, to get through this stuff, and I will do so. NFL, we started the show off talking with Mary Kay Cabot, Cleveland.com, the latest on Baker Mayfield, last hour, and an NBA talk. The latest with Joel Embiid, 97.5, the Fanatics, Devon Givens, giving us the latest. He is listed as doubtful now. List is out yesterday. Chances are he will be playing tonight in Game 3 at home against the Heat. That makes it a series. As a basketball fan, I am happy to see that. But we're going to head to Nashville, Tennessee. One of the fun cities in America, fastest growing areas in this country. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation reporter, covering the Titans, joining us here. And I'll tell you what, man, Ryan Tannehill really getting a lot of criticism for his I'm not here to mentor Malik Willis comment. Has that been blown out of proportion here a bit? People down there saying, come on, man, give the guy a break.
No, not at all. After those three interceptions against the Bengals, there are no breaks to be had for Ryan Tannehill as far as Titans fans are concerned. I do think it is getting somewhat blown out of proportion just because you have to look at the full context of the statement. He was talking about the quarterback room and just what comes with it, and he just said it's not his job. But he did come back and say if Malik learns from him, it is a good thing. It would have been a little more wise for him to follow it up with something like, I'll do everything I can to help him or something along those lines.
You're right, because didn't we deal with this like years ago? Remember when Brett Favre pulled this with a young Aaron Rodgers? You'd think guys in this league would learn from that and say, yeah, maybe that's not the smartest thing to say. But I agree with you. Like, the whole context of the conversation, obviously a bit different than just, I'm not here to mentor the guy. I do believe if Malik Willis asks him something, he'd be more than glad to help him. But is it good to have this competition for Ryan Tannehill? Did he get a little too comfortable in that starting role leading to the three interceptions?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that he got a little too comfortable as much as it just got – he was stuck in a rut, and he was just trying to force things, you know, without some of the playmakers that he needed out there with him. I think that was really the issue. But competition is always a good thing, especially when you're on a professional level. So bringing in Malik Willis to push him, I think that's going to be good. And it's just like before, you know, I think Tannehill is going to have a year similar to that 2019 season where he just went out there and he just let it rip and just said, we're going to see where the pieces fall. And it ended up having good results for him. So I think that's really what it's going to be this year. I think Tannehill, honestly, is going to have a solid year.
And by the way, I think the situation, Teron, that Malik Willis got himself into is perfect, right? He's not expected to come in year one. Listen, Tannehill might put up good numbers, but I don't think people look at him and say he is the franchise elite quarterback. There's going to be an opportunity year two, year three from Malik Willis to really, you know, fight for that starting role. He can sit back. He can kind of learn coming from a place like Liberty where the competition level is a little different. I think for him to fall the third round, yeah, financially it's not ideal, but I think because he's a third round pick and not a first round pick, the expectations are different. Don't you think this really turned out to be the perfect spot for him?
It is definitely the perfect spot for him. And I talked to his personal quarterback coach, Quincy Avery, and that's something that he had made very clear to me as well, that he likes the situation. And the good thing is this is a scheme that's based off of QB movement. So now you get a guy who specializes in that. So there's a match there. You're not going to have to change the scheme when he gets in there. He could come in and learn it and just be ready when it is his turn to take over, get the keys to the car, so to speak. And then, like you said, the pressure to be thrust into the starting lineup isn't there because you have an established quarterback as the starter, and you didn't use a first-round pick on him, so it is a perfect situation for him.
ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the Titans, Teron Davenport, joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich on this Friday. Make sure to follow Teron on Twitter, @TDavenport_NFL. you know, this is a run-heavy offense, no question. When Derrick Henry's healthy, they'll feed him the ball really too many times, you know. Is that going to change based on the fact that, look, he got banged up last year. It was a different team, more pressure on Tannehill, and, you know, he didn't handle it as well with the focus on him. Does Vrabel and that offense have to kind of change it up a little bit and take a little bit off of Henry?
In their mind, they don't. And that's one of the things that Todd Downing, the offensive coordinator, said when Henry went down. He said, we're not going to jerk the wheel on the offense. And they continued to run the football. And they got similar results. Now, Derrick Henry, you're not going to get the same results because he's probably the best back in the NFL. You could argue Jonathan Taylor, but for the most part, you know, he's probably the best guy. So you're not going to get the same, but they still got results. So I say all that to say, with Henry coming back, they're going to continue to run the football. That's what they've established themselves upon, just being a physical offense. And they do want to bring that physicality to the passing game, which is why they went out and got Treylon Burks. I think they're going to add some wrinkles, you know, with Tim Kelly coming in as the pass game coordinator. I would imagine that's going to spice up the passing game a little bit. But in my opinion, they're going to continue to be a run-heavy team. And they brought in Hassan Haskins. So it's kind of bad for opposing defenses because, like, after you get done having your mustache run into by Derrick Henry over and over again, you think you're getting a break, but you got a 6'1", 225-pound back coming in and just to carry on the running through somebody's face. So they're going to be physical.
Sure. You know, it's funny. Talking to my good friend Rodney Harrison, I asked him one day, a couple years ago, I said, if you're a safety in this league, and here comes Derrick Henry at 6'4", 260, full speed, running a 4'4 at you, like, what possesses you to want to put your helmet in his knee, right? Like, I'm turning around, I'm running away. I'm putting my hands up, I'm saying, I'm not hitting this guy, right? The guy is an absolute weapon out there, and I understand why they want to keep feeding him the football. Now, you mentioned Treylon Burks. He comes in, unlike Malik Willis, where there's not a lot of pressure as a third-round pick, and the expectation is he's going to sit. Burks is a first-round pick, and he's got to fill the shoes of a guy that was great and beloved, A.J. Brown. Yeah. Tough situation for him?
Yeah, it is a tough situation for him. A.J. Brown is not as beloved as he was
not
before.
Now.
there's similarities. And I think when you look at Burks, 9.4 yards after the catch is what he averaged last year. That was seventh in FBS. I think you also just have to look at, you know, he's 6'1", 225. A.J. was about the same size. They have very similar running ability, and that DBs, just like Derrick Henry, they don't want to tackle these type of guys because they're sturdy, physical backs, and he has the ability to pull away. I mean, you watch the game against Alabama, you know, it was kind of he was living out Tupac's song, Me Against the World, because, you know, he went against Alabama, and it was him against them, and it wasn't a match, but he held his own personally. So I think it is a lot of pressure for him, but I think he's built for it. I think he's going to do well. They're going to have to find ways to manufacture touches, get him the ball, move him around. If you watch the tape on, if you watch a game, you have to pause before almost every snap to see where Treylon Burks was lining up. And I think that's what the Titans staff has to do in the NFL.
The big knock on him was what? The speed? That he didn't run fast at the combine? Wasn't that the big knock on him?
Yeah, and it's hilarious to me because, yeah, you know, 4.58 or whatever it was, 4.55 I think it was, you know, it's still fast, right? But it's not 4.2, 4.3. But again, you turn on the tape, you look at the A&M game, you look at the Alabama game, you see him catching the ball and running away from defenders. So me personally, like, if I'm evaluating a guy, I'm looking at that as opposed to the combine speed on the track.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the Titans, joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show. I look at this team. I love Vrabel. I've had a chance to sit down with him. I think he's a heck of a coach. Not a lot of holes on this team offensively, defensively. It's a very solid team. They've had success the last couple of years. What do you think they need to get over that final hurdle to be a Super Bowl team? Or is it already together and it's a matter of staying healthy?
Well, they're going to need to find somebody to be an explosive playmaker in the passing game. You pretty much have that in Derrick Henry now, but one of the things that they were able to do was get big plays from A.J. Brown. I'm talking about free yards. You throw a five-yarder, it goes 65 for a touchdown. Treylon Burks has to come in and provide that for him from time to time. Robert Woods has to come in and provide that to him. So they need explosiveness from the passing game, and then they also need consistency, whereas You can't have Ryan Tannehill turning the football over. He had 14 picks last year. That was more than he had in the successful 2019 and 2020 season run that they had together. So you got to get those down. The defense is, you don't even have to talk about the defense. They're solid. You know, they're going to be really good. You saw the Bengals game, 9 sacks. They dominate that front seven. They dominate opposing offenses. So that's going to help them. Offenses has to be consistent.
We got the hierarchy of that AFC, the Buffalo Bills, high expectations, Cincinnati Bengals coming off a Super Bowl run, Kansas City Chiefs, the Kansas City Chiefs, they will be for a long time to come. The Colts have gotten better. If you believe in Matt Ryan kind of being the guy, changes scenery. In your mind, following this Titans team, where do you stack them up right now in the AFC?
Yeah, I have them a playoff team. I would say fifth or sixth in that ballpark. Because, like you said, teams just really reloaded. I mean, the Raiders, you have to put them in the mix, too. So I think they'll make the playoffs as a wild card team. They'll be very close to the Colts as far as winning that AFC South. But I think right now the Colts have a slight edge over the Titans.
All right, you got to answer this last question. I spent time in the South, and I married into a Southern family. Got out of that, but I married into a Southern family. The big thing was always the NFL's looked upon as to where their favorite college players graduated to. But it's college football number one always in the South. Mm-hmm. Have the Tennessee Titans, with that success in Nashville, have they changed that narrative over the years to where NFL is first, or is it still college football first? Titans really like 1A there now.
Yeah, the narrative has been changed to where it's NFL first, but you have to look at the location, right? Vanderbilt is right here in Nashville, and we know that program is not exactly the most successful. And Tennessee, you know, is in Knoxville, a couple hours away.
Yep.
People are crazy about their Vols, but they haven't been that good either. And it just so happened that the Titans have been on an upswing over the last 4 years. So it all kind of fell into place, and Titans football is where it's at.
Yeah, but you know why Vanderbilt's in that SEC, right?
Why is that?
The GPA of the conference, my friend. That's always what they say.
Hey, you
got to
keep it up. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, you got to balance it out. That's an excellent observation.
Somebody's got to keep that GPA high. Vanderbilt has done so. They have not been successful since Franklin, of course, left and went to Penn State. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation reporter, covering the Titans. Follow him on Twitter at @TDavenport_NFL. Teron, appreciate it, man. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Appreciate it. You guys take care.
Awesome stuff there. I'll tell you, that's an interesting team. Realistic guys at 5 or 6 right now in that AFC. I do think the Colts are better. How about that, Art Martinez, giving your Raiders some love there? How about that? Gotta love that.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, absolutely.
What's the big hype with the Raiders? I'm trying to think. You still got Derek Carr, right? He's still there. I think he's good.
Yeah.
Not great.
Josh Jacobs.
They love him so much, they didn't pick up his fifth-year option.
They drafted two running backs.
Right, so they're not in love with Jacobs that much.
Well,
Jacobs,
running backs are a dime a dozen, you know?
Okay, so that's why you don't draft him in the first round.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's your wideouts?
Darren
right
Waller.
Waller's great.
Thurgood right. Renfro.
Yeah, all right. Nothing special.
Yeah. And Davante Adams.
Now, that's right. How could I forget? Davante Adams, right. The big trade, Davante Adams.
You know, the big news was you traded Yannick Ngakoue, and he is pissed. Yeah. He was a Raider captain last year, I just saw a story. The Colts, who they got traded, he got traded to, come visit Vegas, and he's going to have it out for Derek Carr. Oh, my gosh.
I got to throw this out there. I mean, it's funny to hear that Yannick Ngakoue is unhappy that he got let go by the Raiders. I mean, Yannick Ngakoue has become a player that seemingly plays for a different team every year, right? Like,
well, he was good. I was really impressed with his play last year, and he played all 17 games.
10 sacks, a double-digit sacks, good player. But it's funny because this is a guy that has played literally for 4 teams since 2019. So now he's mad that he gets let go by another team. You know,
well, he felt he was a Raider, you know?
Well, yeah, until they got rid of him after
until they
one
get
year
rid of him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you were a Raider for a year. I hope you didn't buy in Vegas. I hope you rented, you know? I mean, that's what I think.
Oops.
I think about the dumbest. I got to tell you, I think about the dumbest things are. Like, I'm always like, okay, you know, these guys, you know, athletes, coaches make a lot of money, right? but yet they move around so much, more so with coaches. Do some of these players like think it's smart to buy in each town that they go to, each city that they go to, thinking that they're going to be there long term? Or are they just like, you know what, I don't know how long I'm going to be here, I'm just going to rent?
That's a good question, because in the NFL, none of those, well, more so now, but none of the contracts are guaranteed, right?
Not fully. But here's the thing, though. Like, real estate's considered a good investment always, right?
Sure, so yeah.
Maybe it is smart to kind of buy a house in every city that you go. Like, Ngakoue would have a place in Jacksonville, a place in Minnesota, although he lasted 6 games there. A place in Baltimore, he lasted 9 games there. A place in Vegas. Like, he'd be like a real estate mogul, right?
Rent them all out.
Yeah, rent them all out. Like, you know, maybe that's a smart thing to do, rather than rent the place in Jacksonville, Minnesota, Baltimore, and Vegas, and now, of course, Indianapolis.
Or spend it all partying.
I don't think he's a partier. I don't think Ngakoue, you don't hear bad things about him. Like, you don't hear that he's out there all the time. You know, he seems to be a real solid guy. Solid guy, doesn't rock the boat in terms of, obviously, off-the-field stuff. But I love when a player's, like, mad that he's let go. Come on, it's a business. It's a business. I mean, Yannick Ngakoue is a good player. He's young enough. Obviously, he still has prime years left. He's 27 years old. And I kind of understand, like, he sees the Raiders are building something, right? They win 10 games last year. They kind of clean house, you know, in terms of coaches, front office. They got rid of Gruden. They got rid of Mayock. They're moving the page from that failure.
Oh, you had breaking news on the Raiders front office.
That's right. And then they brought in a new team president, and he is already out. Dan Ventrell is out as the president of the Raiders as of this afternoon. Now, he was named the full-time president literally after the season in July, and he's out now. No details as to why. So the Raiders being the Raiders again here. But here's what hurts the Raiders, Art. I know you know this. Here's what kills the Raiders in terms of truly being a Super Bowl caliber team against being good but not good enough, because that's what they are. Here's the problem.
Oh, I know what the problem is.
What's the problem?
Having to witness Mark Davis's haircut on TV every time.
That's one of the problems. But you know what the other problem is? The other problem is, while they draft well in the later rounds, like finding like a Max Crosby in, what, the fourth round, they do well, right? And they picked up Darren Waller was, I think, off a practice squad with the Ravens, I believe it was.
Yeah, that's right.
And he did that. You know, he had obviously off-the-field issues, and I give him a ton of credit. He has clearly turned the corner. And I remember on the on the Hard Knocks a couple of years ago, they were raving about his abilities and, you know, about his sobriety and all that stuff, right? And it's great to see him emerge into an all-pro, you know, tight end. Problem is, they have been so terrible with first-round draft picks, and they've had a plethora of first-round draft picks. Like, think about over the last few drafts, how many first-round picks they've had, and the fact that these guys don't actually stick with the team within literally a couple of years. It's actually embarrassing, right? Like, Alex Leatherwood is there still, right? He was overdrafted.
Oh, my
gosh.
Most
people didn't think he was, you know, worthy of being.
He can't stay on sides. False starts just kill him.
Yeah, he's not obviously living up to it. You know, a couple of years ago, they had a couple of first-round picks, top 20 picks, Henry Ruggs, Damon Arnett, neither with the team anymore. Ruggs, obviously, with that terrible car accident in Vegas. And then Damon Arnett, obviously, has had plenty of problems, and there's that gun issue. They're both off the team, and that was a 2020 draft. You cannot have both your 2020 picks be off the team at this point. Josh Jacobs was part of a first round of him. Cleveland Farrell was drafted fourth overall.
Ooh.
And I believe there was Jonathan Abram, the safety. They had 3 first-round picks in 2019. Not a single one of those guys had his fifth-year option picked up. So within 2 drafts and 5 first-round picks, chances are next year's roster will have none of those guys. Next year, meaning 2023. You have an opportunity to bring in 5 guys who can impact your franchise. You're 10-7 this year without the help of 5 first-round picks, really. That's amazing. Imagine if they got some sort of production out of that. Jacobs is at a, obviously, he's been pretty good. But the fact is, if they had drafted properly in 2 straight drafts with 5 picks, this may be a Super Bowl contending team.
Jonathan Abram is really good, but he he hits too hard, and he gets hurt.
And he's not a guy that they feel can do it long term, hence they don't pick up the fifth-year option. You can't have five players not get their first-year options picked up after their rookie deals as first-round picks in two drafts. Can't do it. And then throw in Alex Leatherwood in 2021. They can't draft well in the first round. Maybe the new regime changes that. Who knows? Maybe that changes. Obviously, the jury's out when it comes to the Raiders and their drafting. But it has not been good, and that's why they are good, but not great. Plenty more to come next. Dan Schwartzman filling in for Rich Eisen on this Friday. It is the Rich Eisen Show.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
A lot of NFL talk. I want to thank Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the Titans. Great job out of him. Last segment, giving us the latest from what's happening with the Titans and the Ryan Tannehill situation. I think he kind of misspoke to a point about the I'm not here to mentor Malik Willis. I think if Malik Willis asks him stuff, he will. Problem is, Tannehill's not an old guy. You know, the difference is if Ryan Tannehill was kind of in like the swan song of his career, chances are he probably would be more likely to be the mentorish type, right? Tannehill's 33. In today's NFL, that means he's got at least a good 5 years left. That's like $150 million more dollars in earning, maybe even more. And a guy like Tannehill realizes he probably has one more contract in him. And at 33, he's not ready to start to kind of give up the reins a bit.
Well, if he takes the TB diet, then he could last till 44.
Man, I should get on the TB diet. Let me rephrase that. I should just get on a diet, period.
Exactly.
I got a wedding to go to this weekend, right?
And
the last time I wore like my tux was at my own wedding a year and a half ago.
And it fit.
Of course, at that time. Now, as my wife said, I've put on a couple of pounds since then. I try to deny it, but she's actually correct. I haven't tried on the tux since the wedding. And I actually haven't worn a suit since the wedding, which is September of 2020.
It's biggest thing is the neck.
No, the biggest thing is me.
Exactly. No, the biggest thing that grows is the neck.
Well,
the neck.
Then again, listen, you know, you can always not button that top button and hide it with the tie. You know, you can always do that with a knot of the tie, which I may do anyway, because I hate buttoning that top button anyway. You feel like you're like strangling yourself.
Oh, exactly.
So I'm a little nervous here because Saturday night's rehearsal dinner, I can wear like just like a blazer, you know, sports coat, dark jeans, shoes, you know, look decent like that, casual, nice. But the wedding Sunday, it's like, will I fit into this tux? And if not, will I fit into any one of my suits? I haven't tried them on yet. One, I'm lazy. And two, I'm a little nervous. So what happens if I don't fit into the suit?
You're going to have to rent one really, really at the last minute.
I was thinking of other ideas. I live with three women, obviously, right? There's hair ties all over the house. What if I hair tied the button for the pants? With like that, you know, they have those elastic hair ties women put in their hair. What if I hair tied the button to like a belt loop? I wonder if that would work.
Going MacGyver.
Like I may it. Have to. Hey, listen, Richard Dean Anderson went to a high university just like me. So greatness.
There you go.
Greatness with the Bobcats. But I'm actually thinking of ways of potentially being able to disguise not fitting into the tux or suit if it actually has come to that.
Well, here's the question I have to ask you.
Yeah.
How long are you going to be there? Because if it's just you know, making an appearance, then you can get away with it.
It's like a five-hour thing, like the wedding and then the reception afterwards.
I don't
afterwards.
Know if that's going to hold up.
I'll bring a lot of hair ties, a lot of bathroom trips to make sure it's staying in place. Problem is, if I try this on and it doesn't fit, the look I'm going to get from the wife is going to be... And look, she's from Eastern Europe.
The death stare.
The Russian death stare.
You're
going to
go in the gulag.
I will go to the gulag, exactly. Because she has made note of the fact that she's not sure this is going to fit. And she might be correct, but I don't know yet because I haven't tried it on. But once I do, which I'll do tomorrow, last minute, if it doesn't fit, I will get the Eastern European death stare. And let me tell you something. You don't want to get the Eastern European death stare. It'll turn you to stone. It really will. I'm a little nervous, Art. I may need you to fly out here and help me out.
Wow.
This could be problematic.
Okay, I can cover. Yeah,
I got your back.
I got your back.
Yeah, my rationale is my jeans still fit. Now a little tighter, but they still fit. So if my jeans still fit, I think the other pants should fit. Right? If I've outgrown my jeans, then I should be worried about the suit or the tux. But I haven't outgrown the jeans yet. They're still fitting. Again, a little tight, but they fit. I should be okay with the suit.
I would have the number to Men's Warehouse around your general location, just in case.
Do you guys tailor on the spot?
Exactly.
I will text you, let you know tomorrow what happens.
Yeah, please do.
This could be interesting. This could really be interesting. Again, if I get the death stare, you will not hear from me. I will disappear. You'll know what happened, okay?
We hope not.
I may need you to text me Sunday morning to make sure I'm still around.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. We want to know where your whereabouts are.
Definitely not next to Hoffa, okay? I don't fit into this suit or tux. I'm in a lot of trouble. I may go into witness protection.
Well, you need to document this, you know, with pictures and stuff.
I'm nervous, man. Because she, like, you know, my wife's in great shape. You know, she was an ex-dancer, and she continues to keep herself in shape. And you know, she had a baby, and amazing. Like, she fit in this beautiful dress, and she's tried it on. And I'm like, wow, amazing. And I'm thinking, boy, this might be rough. I will keep you up to date as to what happened. All right, you know what's rough? Let me tell you something that's rough. It's rough being Justin Fields of the Chicago Bears. And it's absolute criminal what the Bears did or did not do in last week's draft when you have a young quarterback like Justin Fields there. Now, I don't buy the Justin Fields hype as much as others have. I think it's outrageous that people look at what he did last year and like, oh my goodness, I see the greatness of Justin Fields. I don't. That's just me. If others want to think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread as a young quarterback, by all means, congratulations. Think that way. I don't buy it. You know, he comes from that Ohio State offense where literally no one has been successful at the quarterback position coming to the NFL, right? RJ Barrett. I mean, the late Dwayne Haskins. Anybody else? Terrell Pryor. Anybody else that played quarterback at Ohio State for that Urban Meyer / Ryan Day offense has done what?
You know, I have a Terrell Pryor Raider jersey.
Why would you buy a Terrell Pryor Raider? Like you thought he'd be there long enough that the jersey made sense to put Pryor on the back?
Yeah, yeah. And then during that season, he had that longest run of his career.
Listen, I'm going to ask you to do yourself a favor. Next time you want to buy a jersey, call me up and say, Dan, do you think this guy's going to be around long enough?
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
Because you're the person that wore a Terrell Pryor jersey at the stadium. That's it. No one else. Because everybody else realized he probably was going to be there for a long time. Congratulations. You're that guy.
Yeah. It's hanging in my closet.
And now, can you have it removed? Can you, like, unstitch the name? Or is it one of the... Is it a stitch name
and
number?
It's authentic. It's authentic.
So can't you get that off and put somebody else's on there?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd have to take it to the tailor.
Take it to like a tailor, like a seamstress, and tell them you want to have the... Who's wearing that number now? Anybody of substance or no?
I have to look at the roster.
Okay, if not, just ask if they can take off the name and the number, and then have another name and number put on. Smart, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. See, you learn something new with me every day. Second time this show in a 2.5 hour period, you've learned something new. Congratulations. Maybe in the next 30 minutes, I'll give you some more great wisdom here. But here's the thing. I'd like to give the Chicago Bears some wisdom. If you have a young quarterback like Justin Fields, you get him in the first round of the draft last year, and he clearly struggled.
It's Daniel Carlson.
Ah, oh, Daniel Carlson. Don't get a Carlson jersey.
Okay.
Just to give you that. So, how do you come out of a draft? Yes, no first-round pick because they had to move up last year to get Fields. But how do you come out of a draft and the only weapon that you've given the poor kid is a third-round wide receiver, Velus Jones, out of Tennessee? He's not Garrett Wilson. He's not Treylon Burks. He's not Drake London. He's not a guy that came out of school where he thought he might be a serious difference maker. Maybe he will be. Might be a diamond in the rough, but how do you wait till the 71st pick to address helping your young quarterback? This is head-scratching. Head-scratching. They lose Allen Robinson, right, this offseason. Their offensive line takes a big hit. They lose, what, Peters, Daniels, guys like that. And their answer in this draft with their 2 second-round picks are Kyler Gordon, a quarterback out of Washington, and Jaquan Brisker, a safety out of Penn State. Okay, you want to go with best player available? Fine. I get it. But as a Jet fan, which I am, a struggling Jet fan, who there is a ray of light now, when the Jets traded up and drafted Sam Darnold third, you had hoped that they'd give him some weapons. Now, I don't think Darnold is any good anyway, right? He was a turnover machine at USC. He's been the same way in the NFL. I don't think giving him weapons would have really changed his career trajectory. He's just not good. But you have to at least give the guy something to work with to find out if he's got talent or not. So Justin Fields, he's already being ruined by the Chicago Bears. There's a new coach. Doesn't seem to matter. They don't seem to understand. Get the guy weapons. Ryan Poles, the first-year GM, okay, he's got to go out there and bring in more guys. I don't understand this. As a Jet fan, I look at the draft that the Jets just had, and they added weapons, 2 of their top 4 picks, 2 of the top 35 picks in this draft, or top 36 picks in this draft, they used on skill position guys, a wide receiver in Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall, the running back from Iowa State, many believe was the best running back in the draft. Last year, they drafted Elijah Moore in the second round because they want to help out Zach Wilson, the quarterback. You got to give the guy something to work with. Strengthen the offensive line. Give him some skill positional guys. They went out, signed 2 tight ends, drafted 1 in the 3rd round of this draft. That's what you do. If you're going to invest in a young quarterback, you give him weapons to work with, because here's the thing. If you give them weapons to work with and they fail, you can at least sit there and tell yourself, we did everything in our power to put that kid in a position to succeed. And he didn't succeed because of himself. He's just not good. He can't read a defense. He's just not accurate. But at least you've done your due diligence to make sure you have given them enough to where you can have an honest assessment on the quarterback's ability. So if Zach Wilson bombs with the New York Jets the next couple of years, you can say, listen, it's him. It's not the team. When Sam Darnold was mercifully traded last year for the Jets in what turned out to be a highway robbery deal with the Carolina Panthers, the question was, is Darnold not that good, or is it a matter of the Jets not giving him anything to work with? It was a legit question at the time. Do you hold on to him, try to build around him because you think he's good or not? They got rid of him and they were right. He's just not that good. But with Justin Fields, what are your expectations in year 2? How's this guy supposed to turn the corner and show improvement when he potentially has less to work with on that offense than he had last year when he had nothing to work with at all? It's an absolute head-scratcher. I don't sit here and tell you I'm an NFL GM or if I'm qualified to be an NFL GM. It's a very difficult job, okay? Judging talent to draft players is very difficult. It is a crapshoot. Some people figure out how to do it better than others. Ozzie Newsome was a genius with the Ravens when it came to drafting players, but even he had misses, right? Everybody will have misses. The New York Jets, you know, they trade up, they draft Darrelle Revis, 14th overall, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of football. But then the same GM, Mike Tannenbaum, I believe, drafted Vernon Golston out of Ohio State, 6th overall, and the guy's one of the worst players in the history of the NFL, never had an NFL sack as a 6th overall pick. So with Justin Fields, who already kind of had to come in and learn that the NFL is different than Ohio State, which is more of that playful, fun offense, which isn't quite what the NFL is about, you're putting this kid in a position to fail. You put him in a position as an 11th overall pick last year to fail, and now in year two, you're putting him in a position to fail as well. And he may lose enough confidence, and we know he's a confident guy, but he may lose enough confidence struggling through year two here to where you have literally damaged the kid to where you don't know if he would have been any good. Again, I don't think he would have been great anyway. I never bought into the Justin Fields hype. But the reality is there's no way to tell considering you've put nothing around this poor guy. Nothing. How do you do that? This is an offensive league, right? This is a passing league. We used to laugh and say wide receivers are a dime a dozen. Why are you paying that wide receiver a lot of money? Look at this offseason in the NFL today. Look at the money being spent. A.J. Brown gets traded for, you know, first round pick plus, gets $25 million a year. Tyreek Hill gets traded in a deal that included a first round pick. He gets $30 million a year. Davante Adams gets traded in a deal where, what, two first round picks go? Was it two first round picks? Okay. And he gets a contract for $30 million bucks a year right around there, right? So wide receivers aren't looked upon as a dime a dozen. They are obviously now on the same level as left tackles, cornerbacks, edge rushers, right behind the quarterback in terms of importance because it's a passing league. I remember when a quarterback threw for 4,000 yards, it was a big deal. I remember when the Green Bay Packers had Don Majkowski, remember him, the Magic Man? And he threw for 4,000 yards in one season, and everybody's like, wow, that's amazing. And you looked at NFL stats and you realized, wow, two, three, four players, if that, threw for 4,000 yards in a season. Art Martinez, we're close in age. You remember those days when 4,000 yards meant something, right?
Dan Marino. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. We threw for 5,000 yards that year. No one was even close. Yeah. No one was even close. Well, let me tell you something. Last year in the NFL, you had two players throw for 5,000 yards. You had 10 players throw for 4,000 yards. 10 players. You had guys who almost threw for 4,000 yards that teams don't want. Matt Ryan was 32 yards shy of it, and he got traded. Jimmy Garoppolo was under 200 yards away from 4,000 in 15 games, by the way, and no one wants him. It means nothing anymore. It's a passing league. You need wide receivers. All right, we're going to break down these NBA games tonight. Mavericks, Sixers, can they stay alive in their series as we wrap things up next? Dan Schwartzman in for Rich Eisen on a Friday right here on The Rich Eisen Show.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. I'll be back, by the way, Tuesday and Wednesday, May 24th and 25th. Filling these large shoes again as Rich will be off. How many people are off that? What is that week? Maybe he seems to want to take off that week. I don't know. Whatever. I always enjoy sitting in, filling in for Rich. And I guess also filling in for my good friend Ryan Leaf as well, who is filling in for Rich as well. It's kind of like a fun lineage here. I enjoy it. A lot of people to thank, by the way. I want to thank Mary Kay Cabot from Cleveland.com. Joined us in hour number one. Devon Givens, 97.5 The Fanatic. 76ers Insider, Sixers pre- and post-game show host in hour two. And here in hour three, Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation reporter for the Tennessee Titans, joined us as well. Two NBA games tonight. Postseason continues after the break yesterday. I've enjoyed these playoffs. A couple of great players. I love watching Jimmy Butler. He'll be in action tonight for Miami. Joel Embiid, now listed as doubtful. He has cleared the protocol The concussion and the facial fracture was listed as out yesterday, now doubtful today for game three. Doubtful to me means he will play. And tonight after that, that's the early game on the East Coast, the West Coast game, Dallas hosting Phoenix. Phoenix is up 2-0. The defending Western Conference champions look like they'll be rolling to the conference final. Dallas just isn't good enough. They have one of the great players in the league today, one of the most exciting players to watch. Luka's going to put up 40 points tonight, and it's not going to be enough. What's that old saying? Stick a fork in them, they're done? Yeah, the Dallas Mavericks just aren't good enough. Jason Kidd coming out, calling out the rest of the team, and good for him. You know, I love when people are, you know, want to be like, well, that's not a popular thing. You shouldn't call out players. Look, if you're a player, you shouldn't call out your teammates, right? I don't think you should put your teammates on the spot publicly like that. Whatever happens behind closed doors, fine, do it. But if you're the head coach of a team, and it's quite evident what's happening here, right? Everybody sees why the Dallas Mavericks aren't winning these games. There's no serious option. Brunson's Brunson. He's good. He's not great. He's not a true number two type guy that you can fill in right behind Luka and say, there you go. That's the makings of a great team. It's not. You have a large gap between Luka and Jalen Brunson that has to be filled with a player and a substantial player. So Luka's going to score his points, but it's not going to matter, right? Like, Luka will score, he'll do his thing tonight, they'll look great, and then they're going to lose.
They'll even let him score.
It's exactly. Because the thing is, Luka can put 45 points up like game one, it's not going to matter. And Phoenix and Monty Williams, one of the top coaches in this league, back-to-back NBA Coach of the Year, best record in the league, they realize that. Why try to stop Luka? Let him do his thing. We'll stop everybody else because no one else is really going to be that much of a threat. And that's what's going to happen. They're just not good enough. So Jason Kidd is right for calling out the guys. These are professional athletes getting paid boatloads of money. They can handle the criticism. Because don't tell me it's, you know, don't tell me it's not raining when I'm feeling water falling on me. You watch that team, you realize there's no one else. So you might as well pencil Phoenix into the Western Conference Finals. They're going to be there. Now, in the East tonight, I'm not sure what Joel Embiid gives you. I think he gives you enough. I think Joel Embiid comes out. I don't think he's going to be that rusty. He's had a handful of games here. It's not like he missed months, right? Or half a season or anything like that. I think Joel Embiid walks on that court, give him a couple of minutes to kind of get himself comfortable with the fact that, you know, I mean, sometimes when you come back off an injury, you are a little nervous, right? Like, you
hesitant.
Don't want to, you're hesitant. Good word. You're hesitant. You don't want to re-aggravate it. You don't want to take a shot to the face, whatever it might be. And then you realize, man, I'm good. I'm fine. And then you're back to being the player you were. I think that's what it's going to be. And Embiid comes out, man. Miami's got some problems because they don't match up well. Miami is not a good matchup for the Sixers in Miami's, you know, in the Sixers' favor. If the Sixers played the Bucks here in the second round, Embiid's covered by Giannis, right? 6'11". There's height there. There's athleticism there. You can actually put a body on Joel Embiid. Boston could put a body on Joel Embiid, right? I mean, Robert Williams is one of the top defensive players in the NBA today. Great defensive player. Look at the sabermetrics of basketball on what he offers that Celtics defense. He is a great defensive player. Miami doesn't have the height. Bam Adebayo is an all-NBA defensive player. He is. He's a really, really solid defensive guy. You love the effort. But he can't match up with Joel Embiid. Embiid's too big. He's too skilled. All right, you want to cover him out three-point line, he'll drive the lane, he'll score that way, post up, whatever. You want to try to cover him inside, he goes outside, he can knock down a three-pointer. Embiid is one of the most skilled guys in this league. He's a nightmare mismatch for the Miami Heat. So you have yourselves a series there. If Embiid's back tonight, and I do expect him to play, he's out there on the court, doing his thing, man, turn the page from the first two games down 2-0. Now we have ourselves an interesting 5 games coming up. Miami's no shoo-in to move on. Not at all. It's going to be fun. I am anticipating this. I didn't anticipate, wasn't that excited for the first 2 games with him out. But you throw the big man in there, wow. Fun series. You don't have to be a big NBA fan to want to sit down and watch that. Going to be a fun time. absolutely a fun time. Listen, the guy could be the league MVP this year. Let's see him go out there and show it. Showed it during the regular season. He's got a great argument to make. Kind of fun to think about who ultimately deserves it, right? And is Embiid, who led the NBA in scoring, the only guy to score over 30 points a game, is he the guy that's going to do it? Nikola Jokic of Denver, the reigning league MVP, better numbers this year than he had last year, right? I mean, the guy put up some ridiculous numbers. Nikola Jokic this year for the season, 27 points, almost 14 rebounds, almost 8 assists per game. How do you not give that guy the MVP again? Giannis, could he win another one? 30 points, 11.5 rebounds, 6 assists per game? I think Embiid kind of has that. I think he's the hot hand now, right? I think he's the guy that you throw out there and you say, yeah, time to give the big guy his due. Guy's dealt injuries early in his career. Had to kind of, you know, go through the rough times of Philly. He's the guy that's left standing. The whole Ben Simmons saga. I like that Joel Embiid kind of became more of a team leader, calling out Ben Simmons at times. Made a lot of sense. All right, want to thank Mary Kay Cabot, Cleveland.com, Devon Givens from 97.5, The Fanatic, Sixers Insider, and Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation reporter, covering the Tennessee Titans, all hopped on the show today. It is a Friday, big weekend coming up for all. Hope everybody gets a little relaxing time. I'll be back in this chair. I'm in this chair May 24th and 25th. I'm Dan Schwartzman, in for Rich Eisen on The Rich Eisen Show.